Me and B holding it down. Miami, Florida. Looking at Hard Rock Stadium here at the Baptist Health Training Complex. This is a pretty impressive facility. They also have a pretty impressive facility down in Dallas, Texas. Joining us now is our buddy Bobby Belt. Covers the Cowboys, does radio down in Dallas, just like us, 105.3 The Fan. Bobby, what up, man? How you doing?
What's up, gentlemen? How you doing?
We're in Miami, which is cool. Physically, it's not cool, but it's dope to get to watch the practice, get to watch Tyreek running around. Chad Ochocinco is here. But we wanted to talk to you to kind of see what the hell is going on in the Big D. Get us up to speed.
Yeah, they are still in their standstill as it remains with their big three contracts that they have to get done. Micah Parsons, Dak Prescott, and CeeDee Lamb. Mike is the one that is the one that can probably afford to just push off the most and wait till next year to handle because, you know, they've still got him under contract this year, fifth year option next year, and then they can tag him after that. CeeDee Lamb is in his fifth year right now, has been holding out for all of training camp. And Dak Prescott is a free agent at the end of this season with a no franchise tag clause within his contract and a no trade clause within his contract. So you have absolutely no power to dictate or, you know, have leverage over Dak Prescott. So those three have kind of been at a standstill. They're working closest probably with Lamb at this point, but that's kind of been the main focus for the Cowboys has been those three contracts and the story that's been. And then on the football field, it's kind of been business as usual. It's been a quiet camp, actually, from a, you know, on-the-field perspective because there's just so much going on that people are asking about in the actual business offices.
You think CD gets done because, like you said, they have no control basically over Dak. They can wait next year, but would that be the first one, CD?
Yeah, I think they got to get CD done, especially if they're in a position that's remarkably similar to the one they were in 2019. So heading into the 2019 season, you had Dak entering the final year of his deal, Amari Cooper entering the final year of his deal, and Zeke holding out. And this was all while Jason Garrett, your head coach, was entering, you know, was a lame duck head coach, didn't have a contract passed that season. Same sort of thing this year. Mike McCarthy is in the last year of his deal. You've got three contracts that are coming up that are putting pressure on you. One of them is your quarterback, Dak Prescott, and you've got a player who's holding out of camp right now in CeeDee Lamb. And so they're in a remarkably similar fashion, and that season turned toxic fast for them. Uh-huh. Because when things start spiraling, we start having struggles, it's easy for guys who feel no security to start saying, all right, well, I got to start looking out for me, and I got to start figuring out what I'm going to do moving forward. And that goes for not just players, that goes for coaches. Like, there are coaches who start trying to, like, network around and figure out, where is my next gig? Because it's not going to be here, and we're having trouble here. So it's a very dangerous, delicate situation. So I think they can get Dak and Lamb done before the season starts. I think they'd ideally like to do that. I don't see any realistic chance they do it with Dak. Lamb is the one that they've got a better shot, but they've got to be willing to lose the negotiation a little bit. Too often they get hung up on this idea of win the negotiation and the high that seems to come from that. And they delay contracts and delay them and delay them and delay them, and they end up paying, you know, significantly more than they would have. So I think they're going to get Lamb done before the season starts. Probably not until they get back from Oxnard next week. But I mean, they're working. That they've got ground to make up with Lamb before the season starts.
I think Schefter the other day made clear that he thinks the CD contract gets finished. So I think that'll be a done deal.
Lamb's the one that they have the most interest in getting that one done immediately, and that's the one that Stephen and Jerry have spoken about most publicly recently.
All right, so let's say CD gets done. Micah, you do have time, so that's mm-hmm. a little different. What do you make of Dak? Whether the rumor is stupid or not, it seems like him going to Dak being a free agent, and then you get Shedeur Sanders next year. Have you heard any of that crazy stuff? Like, does that actually Dion all of these things? Do you give any of that any mind?
I would think I don't think either one of those things are happening. But if you told me which one is more likely, Shedeur potentially being the quarterback next year is more likely to me than Dion being the head coach. because I think with Shedeur, I think there's a general thought among scouts that I've spoken with that entering the season, they view, the consensus kind of seems to be Shador is a back end of the first, early second type of player. And he's got a chance to elevate that status depending on how he plays this year. And so I think that with Dak being a free agent, if he were to move on, even if you're with Dak this year and you're a playoff team and then you're without a quarterback, you're sitting at the back end of the first, that might be around where Shador Sanders goes. Again, depending on how much he elevates his stock this season. So Shador could potentially be a fifth year if they were without a quarterback, because right now the quarterbacks they have behind Dak are Cooper Rush and Trey Lance. Cooper Rush, who's won NFL games as a starter before, Trey Lance, who's a former third overall pick, but none of the three are under contract. They literally don't have a single quarterback under contract for 2025 right now. And so wow. It's a little bit of a stressful, pressure-filled position that they're in right now. So they may get to a point where if Dak leaves, they're going to be forced to potentially address it in the draft or go get a bridge quarterback in free agency until they can figure something out. But, I mean, if this goes sideways and you lose Dak and McCarthy gets fired, you might just say, hey, we're hitting the detonation button on this one.
Just go into rebuild? I mean, I guess you kind of have to. Dak's a good player, and there aren't enough quarterbacks. Obviously, there'd be a verbose market for him, right? Like, there's got to be suitors out there, I would assume.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that he would absolutely have a market. You know, Ian Rappaport talked about it with Rich Eisen a couple weeks ago, where Eisen said if he hits free agency, Dak, you think he gets 60 a year? And Rappaport said way more. He would get way more than 60. And wow. So, and that's it. Next year is kind of a thin quarterback class in the draft, and it is a thin free agent quarterback class.
The Giants give up on Danny Dimes.
Go to Dak.
I'm just saying. Like, I'm running through scenarios in my head.
But let me ask you this question, Bobby. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, do you have any idea how much it would eat Jerry Jones up inside if in 2025 they're kicking off on Sunday Night Football against the New York Giants, quarterbacked by Dak Prescott and coached by Bill Belichick? I don't think he would be able to handle that.
He'll probably feel a little bit like Mara was feeling about Saquon going to Philly. But let me ask you this question, yeah. Okay. We've seen Micah Parsons. We understand he has unbelievable talent. But looking at Dan Quinn and Joe Witt, they seem to use him in different ways to basically accentuate his talent. Will mm-hmm. the defense now and coordinator now use him like they were using him or try to make him become one-dimensional, and he's less effective that way?
Zimmer's going to move him around a lot more than Quinn did, I think. Quinn would stand him up, sometimes put him in the hand of the ground. But, yeah, Dan Quinn was very versatile in the way that he used stuff, but he would kind of give you a static look. Like, it was just, here's what we're doing. Zimmer, of course, he's got the, his reputation is the double A gap blitzes. That's one of his calling cards. So
it's funny, we're out there in training camp.
we saw a lot of, in training camp, we saw a lot in Oxnard, California, of Micah Parsons standing in the A gap and rushing, or sometimes he's dropping back. There have been instances, you know, typically we've seen DeMarcus Lawrence on one end, Micah Parsons on the other. They've gone out there in certain packages where Micah is standing up on the same side as DeMarcus Lawrence, and they're both rushing from the same side. And again, sometimes there's a lot more, pre-snap disguise with what Mike Zimmer wants to do than what Dan Quinn does. Quinn has a lot of different versatile ways that he plays the defense, but at least our experience here in Dallas was he was going to show you pretty much pre-snap what they were wanting to do. Whereas with Zimmer, it's a lot of showing blitzes, you know, dummy communication, trying to, you know, stress the quarterback and their communication. And Micah Parsons has been a big, big part of that. But, you know, we got a chance to talk to Zimmer out in Oxnard, and he had talked about that he was really impressed with how quickly Micah was picking up so many of the things that he was asking him to do, because he's like, there's a lot that goes into it. There's some complexities, and it can take some time for guys, but he is pretty much telling the first time he gets it, and he's in with it. So they're going to definitely, I think he's going to be in coverage more than he was under Dan Quinn, just because if you're trying to use those double A gap blitzes, you've got to play the other side a little bit sometimes where you show blitz and drop back and have him playing coverage. And so I think that Zimmer is going to use Micah in a lot of really diverse ways. But that it'll be, he may not be rushing nearly as frequently as he was with Quinn, but he might be more efficient on those rushes.
It's going to be interesting. When you think of the loss of DQ and Joe Witt from the staff, like the not necessarily what they do schematically and all of that, but like the dudes. How big of a loss is that for Dallas?
Yeah, I think Quinn is a guy who he was exactly what they needed when he was hired here. They needed the guy who was, you know, the leader of men, rally around and you know, kind of put his hand on your shoulder and get down in the trenches with you and be like a father figure. That is 100% what they needed. And I think Quinn brought that and brought out the best in so many of the guys. I think they also reached a point now where they kind of plateaued a little bit. And now they needed somebody to come in here and kick their ass a little bit. And that'll be Zimmer. And so
they've like
talked about that. Right. Yeah, he's going to come in here and he's going to be more of a hard ass. He's going to be, you know, he's going to be chewing your ear out. And he is a much more aggressive coaching style, which some of them probably need. But I know it was tough for a lot of guys. I mean, it was similar to when Rod Marinelli left here, where Rod Marinelli connected with guys so deeply and was such a father figure for them that it was tough when he moved on, even if schematically you felt like things had kind of capped a little bit. So I think that Quinn's a big part of that, too. And then Joe Witt, definitely a big loss. Al Harris is also in that secondary, and he's coached a lot of those guys. So I think they feel like there was kind of a, I don't want to say a tussle, but I mean, there was kind of a natural, like, who's in charge here sort of faction with Joe Witt and Al Harris both coaching the secondary last year. So I think it helps that just now you have a single, you know, voice that everybody can kind of rally around and go like, okay, this is our guy, instead of having kind of like secondary coaches.
How much confidence does the fans have in Zeke and back in Dallas in the backfield?
Ooh, confidence.
I mean, Jerry has a lot of confidence. But I'm just wondering what the fans have.
I feel like B's trolling you with that question.
I'm not trolling them. I'm asking a real question because they went out there and made that move as if this is going to make a world of difference.
I mean, I'm confident he'll pick up 2 yards per carry because he is 6 feet tall, and just falling forward should be 2 yards. So I'm confident in that. Past that, I don't know. Tell me what they have blocked up for him, and even what they have blocked up for him, how much of that is he going to be able to then take advantage of? Look, Zeke was one of the top players in the NFL the first few years of his career. He's not that guy anymore. He doesn't have the same burst. He's a guy, I think, who – he's a tone setter now with his physicality, the juice that he brings to the room in terms of how hard he runs, how hard he practices. They really are going to value what he brings to them now Monday through Saturday because he does set good work habits and practice habits and that stuff. Sunday, he's just not a lead back anymore. Now, he may have to be at times because they haven't really figured out their running back room, but I still think there is a trade on the horizon at some point where they go get a different running back to kind of be the lead. But it'll be whoever that guy potentially is, along with Zeke and then Rico Dowdle. That's kind of going to be their collection. But Zeke is not anybody that I think fans or even analysts would say, like, moves the needle for this football team at all. That's just they needed somebody else to come in here and do their job the right way. And that's just kind of why Zeke's here. I don't think it's because they believe Zeke makes any sort of real tangible difference in terms of talent at this stage of his career.
Oh, my life.
All right. I want to ask you this, Bobby, before I tweet this out. Is this a fair quote? This is the notes I was taking. Talking with Bobby Belt about Cowboys bringing in Zeke Elliott, I'm confident he will go for 2 yards per carry. They really value what he brings Monday through Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I said.
I'm hitting tweet. I just want to be sure.
Look, he is Bam Morris with leadership skills at this point.
Wow.
Sounds like Bam Bam Bigelow. Dude, here's my last question. So you got the CeeDee Lamb thing. Parsons is probably a year away. I think you're right about that. The Dak thing, Dak seems like he might just chill and, hey, Jerry, we've done this dance before. You got to pay me 65 per, yeah, or
show
I'm
me
going
some
to the
respect.
Market. Right.
Put some spec on my name.
You've got Zeke as your lead, as your RB1, maybe. You lose your D coordinator. This is perhaps an overly simplistic question, but Dallas was good last year. Is Dallas – they won the NFC East. Is Dallas still good?
I think Dallas – it can go either way. So here's the thing. I think players 1 through 22, you're 11 starters on both sides of the ball. I think the Cowboys are still one of the better teams in the NFL. Players 23 through 53, I think they have a bottom third roster. They don't have any depth anymore. They lost a ton of it. Thank you, Washington. They lost a ton of it. And I'll give you this example. You guys know out there covering training camp, how many, I don't even know off the top of my head, how many players have the Commanders signed since you guys started training camp with veteran experience? Have you guys brought in a veteran or two?
They just brought in Martavis Bryant. What you got on that?
All right. Martavis Bryant, yeah, who last played football during the Obama administration. So when you look at the Cowboys, since August 1st, the last 2 weeks, the Cowboys have acquired 8 players with NFL experience. They are trying to mix and match depth that they feel like they don't have right now. Just signing guys off the street or signing guys who got cut or making a trade. Like, all right, well, let's trade this guy for this guy. Let's go sign this guy. But they've made 8 acquisitions. There's 7 of them have been on defense. So Zimmer's clearly trying to figure out depth stuff that, hey, I need different challenges in here. I need guys to come in here and, you know, provide competition over here, or potentially, hey, this is somebody that we're going to end up sticking on the roster. But, I mean, they traded for Jordan Phillips from the Giants last night. They signed Carl Lawson today. You know, a couple weeks ago, it was Shaka Tony ended up here. And so they've gone through these.
Shaka Tony is a former Washington.
That's a hell of a name.
Released player because he got suspended for a year for
damn it.
Betting on games.
Well, he made it a whole 13 days before he was released yesterday. So that's 8 players. If you're mixed, I understand making the Anthony Barr signing or the Malik Hooker signing, like when you're in training camp, teams will give you one of those occasionally. When you're looking for signing 8 players in 2 weeks to potentially compete as depth on your 53-man roster, that's concerning to me.
Wow. Yeah. Well, dude, I tell you what, two of the Cowboys' depth guys from the last few seasons, Dorrance Armstrong, and we just call him Noah I, because that's a hell of a last name to pronounce.
Igbinoghene.
Both, Armstrong's a starter here, no question. And Noah I is probably their 5th corner and maybe their 4th.
Yeah.
Like, those, you know what I mean? Like, those are two important depth or kind of quasi starters for Dallas that are now in Washington.
Yeah, and I mean, you've got Tyler Biadasz now, and that was one that we had lost here in Dallas, and they haven't settled on who their starting center is. They drafted Cooper Beebe in the 3rd round out of Kansas State, but he has primarily been a guard. He hasn't snapped since high school, I think it was. So, I mean, there's a viral video out there of him snapping to his mom during the summer to try and get, like, reps in snapping the ball, and it hasn't always been consistent. There have been some, you know, high snaps to Trey Lance during some of these workouts, but he's improved steadily, and he was actually given first-team reps starting yesterday, so now we got a little bit of a competition between Brock Hoffman and Cooper Beebe, but, I mean, center still hasn't been settled yet.
That proved parents would do anything for their babies. That's all that proves.
Exactly.
Bobby, as always, I appreciate you making time, bud.
Absolutely. Thanks. Appreciate y'all.
All right. Bobby Belt. Love having him on the show. You can follow him at Bobby Belt TX. Everybody from Texas got to let you know they're from Texas.
From Texas.
Now, listen, we've talked a lot about the weather here, the heat here, kind of the vibes here, the humidity here. There's only one man. If I ever moved to Florida, there's only one man I would trust to get my home right, and that's Paul Henry. Paul's the only dude that can figure out the type of windows that'll even keep this damn humidity out. Yeah, like, if you want to keep your house cool in Miami, you better call Paul. Paul, you should expand and set up a South Florida office. Working with Paul Henry changed my house. It can change your house, too. I'm telling you, work with him. It's a family vibe. And if you call this month, you get $100 off windows with a 5-window minimum and $500 off doors.
We know a guy in the thread yesterday say, oh, man, they just say that because Paul took care of them, but he's gonna rob you. No, he's not. Paul takes care of everyone. I got people in my neighborhood. They don't talk on the radio. They don't talk about Paul. But you know what? They got damn good deals, way better than the other companies were offering them, because the man is an honest dude, and he wants to come out there. And he wants you to come back when you get something else done at your house. So if he messes over you the first time, you won't call him back. Paul goes back to his clients a lot because they believe in him and they trust in him, just like JP and I do. So you reach out to Paul right now. You can get $100 off each window with the 5-window minimum and $500 off each door. Contact Paul Henry's Window Installation today and tell him B. Mitchell Finley sent you. PaulHenry'sWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice.
Grinding. All right, a little news here in Miami. The heat index has gotten over a certain number. I don't know what that number is, but they are moving practice inside. If you were curious how hot it is, that's how hot it is. They're moving everybody inside. Now, for all the folks that say we only give you positive Jaden Daniels news, I was just watching 11 on 11 work over here. Daniels had an impressive day, but he threw the ball. Okay, thank you, man. He threw the ball to Cole Turner. Cole had it, got popped up in the air, interception. These things are going to happen, but for everybody that says we only tell you about the Jaden highlights, there's a low light. There's a pick.
He threw it in there in his hands, and he had it. That's on Cole Turner.
A little high, but yeah, I agree with you. Jaden has looked quite good. I liked this tweet from Omar Kelly that I highlighted. Omar's been covering the Dolphins for a long time. He's now a columnist for the Miami Herald, but like a South Florida institution.
Mm-hmm.
And Omar tweeted out, Terry McLaurin beat Marcus May for a touchdown on a goal line throw. This rookie is good, and good in all caps. I thought that was...
Did they say Terry beat him?
Terry beat the Dolphins corner, and that, but more than...
Oh, he's saying that, what's the column is good?
Daniels.
Daniels is good, okay.
Yeah. I think
I kind of misread that. He said the corner got beat, but the corner's good.
No. He's saying Daniels is good.
Oh, he is, man. He is.
It's been a heck of a day out here. I think, you know, things get a little chippy. I don't think we should read too much into that, man. You know, the offensive and defensive linemen are really hitting. Like, that's the closest you're getting to real football, and they're going to get a little chippy.
But that's what DQ told you when we were out there in OTA. He said, this means nothing for those big guys, just skill guys. We'll find out what they're about once we start putting on pads and things. Those guys, whether they try to go full speed or not, they have to. And they get more tired than anybody out there because you get two guys 200 pounds grabbing each other wrestling, they're going to get tired. They normally 300-plus.
Right.
Can you imagine how they feel after a practice?
Totally, man. I mean, worn out.
But the practice, we've been looking at it, and I'm not, based off of what I've seen, I'm not saying one way or the other. They've had some plays. We've had plays. You know, we saw our defense do some good things. I look over there. I see their defense doing something. And then flip-flop, offenses did stuff on either side. I don't think I come away from saying one team dominated the other.
No, and it did look that way against the Jets. Mm-hmm. And today has looked, honestly, a big part of it is that the offense has looked a lot better. And for all the concern, they have their starting tackles. Or they have at least the next level up on the depth chart makes a big difference.
It does.
And I think Jaden's looked locked in. Not to mention, B, it was awful weather. In Jersey, it was pouring rain sideways most of that practice. Today it's hot, but this is perfect football weather. Everybody can keep their feet.
But everybody playing in the same weather. So if they were playing in different weather,
but
it makes a difference.
In 11 on 11s, when a D-line knows you're probably not cutting them, they're not running much, and it's bad weather, it's probably a lot easier to go upfield than it is to plant and set, right?
Probably so.
Or maybe I'm reaching. I don't know.
No, it's like that, but I'm just saying, in that day, our team was practicing in the same weather they were. And they may have got the best of them, but in the game, it didn't look like that. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
So, and I think I'm looking out here today. I saw some good things. I can tell you this. If you're going to sit up here and praise people and things like that, every time I see Mikey Samuelsio practicing or doing something, I get more and more ready to see this kid playing throughout the year. This dude can play football.
Dog.
You know, and like, you want to – you don't want to sit up here and just like, oh, well, it's practice. But every day he does something. I was watching a play down the field, and I saw a guy on special teams make a play. Then I saw a guy on defense make a play. Guess what number he was?
2.
40.
Your boy Owens.
Who makes plays every damn day. So we were talking earlier about people, how we automatically assume that people are talking about one guy because he's a first rounder. That kid wasn't drafted. And every time somebody that coaches him speaks, they mention his name. And he makes plays daily. That is how you make a football team, and that's how you begin to build a name for yourself. It's not about where you picked and people like you or not. It's about what you do on a consistent basis with the opportunity presented. And he started off as an undrafted free agent. Now he's made so many plays that he constantly get chances to do other plays.
Totally.
Which means the coaches are falling for him. And I like that story with that kid as well. Tyler Owens.
Yeah, man, I think there's a lot to like there, obviously. I think if you're just considering undrafted guy, big, long, hard hitter, not just willing, but seems good on special teams.
Yeah.
And one of the things we talked about yesterday when we tried to kind of work a roster out, I don't see a way where they're not keeping more safeties than corners. Wow, look over there. Is that Ramsey? One of the guys that didn't practice today is
no, that's Odell.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, number three.
Okay. I mean, watching Beckham, I mean, just work on the side field out in the heat. I mean, did you see that lateral speed when he was doing those drills, B?
He got that, what's called on him?
That, was that the parachute thing, he like got, the resistance band?
Yeah, the resistance band on him.
To hit that speed with the resistance band on, now you got Odell dapping up Ocho Cinco. That's what's happening right there. It's Miami's a different place, man. It's a different place than Ashburn, Brian. There's no palm trees in Ashburn.
There's no palm trees. But you know what? I think the same flavor you have here is coming back to Washington.
Where guys want to be there because they think they're part of a winning
guys
operation.
Guys want to be around, and the people that are on the team have a level of respect and camaraderie with the guys that played before. It's on its way back.
That would be tremendous, man. And you know what? I kind of slept on this. Somebody in the chat pointed this out on the stream. You forget how significant once upon a time Redskins Dolphins as a rivalry was.
Yeah.
When the Dolphins had the undefeated season, I think that was 72.
Mm-hmm.
They beat the Skins in the Super Bowl. That was George Allen.
I just watched the game. They had some highlights from 1990.
Wow.
Ernest had 32 carries for 157 yards. And I'm like, oh, boy, I didn't know I had some carries in that game.
That was your rookie year, right?
Yeah, they gave me a few carries in that game.
Well, and think about the most iconic play in Washington franchise history is John Riggins. Fourth down.
Oh, yes.
I mean, these two teams, there's some history.
They have some history there.
There's some history. Nobody go anywhere. It's B. Mitch and Finley. Love this tune, Jeff. It's the vibe right now, man. Me and B are live down in Miami. Commanders joint practice against the Dolphins just wrapped, and I will say damn near definitively this was just a really strong session for both teams. I think both teams kind of, you know, got some wins. Both teams took some L's. It did end on a little bit of a tough note for the Burgundy and Gold as McLaurin, I think, slipped coming out of a break, and Kendall Fuller got a pick on Jaden Daniels to wrap things up. But I'm telling you, man, this was a good session, and the Jets was not for Washington, but this one really was. I think, you know, the Miami speed is so significant, and I think the secondary actually held up a little bit. We're going to try to talk with some folks that have been watching throughout. We're going to see if perhaps we get a player to join us. I'm going to be honest, we were in a really good position to get a player to join us when they were outside on the practice fields. But once they went inside, I'm not sure we're going to get a player to walk back outside. we were in a strong position.
We were in a stronghold.
but
and now it changes.
Yeah. Now I don't know that. I don't know. We'll see.
Yes.
But B, I was just saying, I think this is a really strong day of practice for both ball clubs.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
I just did a little thing with the Commanders PR, but their social media team, and my words, and I meant them, was that, you know, I think when you look out there on the field, they didn't look lost. They look like they belong. And you want to see young guys who you see the coaches constantly mention, you want to see those guys go out there and perform. And Mikey Sanders still a rookie, one-on-one on Tyreek Hill, and the defense was able to get to where the ball floats, and he was able to knock that ball down and be there. And then you got another guy who's completely on a different end of the spectrum in Tyler Owens, undrafted, and the coaches mention his name, and then every day you see him making a play, and you can understand why they're excited about the young man. And he's also making them be more excited about him by making play after play after play.
Even more than that, man, I think you look at Now, the Dolphins certainly lost Christian Wilkins. That was a huge loss for them. That's a stud in the middle of that D-line. But I do think having – now, we got to confirm this. I know Coleman was here but didn't do any team drills. I'm almost positive, but I don't want to say it just in case. I'm going to confirm it. But I believe you saw Lucas and Wiley out there. That makes – for like we had I love him. Dear friend of mine, I know he drives you crazy, but you love him too, Barstool Nate. Mm-hmm. And Barstool Nate's very upset that they haven't addressed tackle. But in that Jets practice, man, they didn't have tackles out there. They had Chris Paul and Trent Scott, who if you get to your fourth tackle on your roster, you're probably in trouble. It doesn't matter if it's the Kansas City Chiefs, the Rams, the Bills, like whatever team. You get to a fourth tackle, you're probably in trouble. Mm-hmm. Now you are at, I don't know. I think Coleman was certainly tracking to win the job. I think the team also wanted him to win the job.
Yeah.
But you're at least your 1A and your 2 between Wiley. And dude, if that interior is better, like you keep talking about, you know what'll help the secondary is the pass rush?
Yeah.
If the interior of the offensive line is significantly better than it was last year, and it was really bad to start last season, that helps the guys on the edges tremendously.
It does.
And dude, for all, one thing I keep seeing, Cliff is going to have – 2 tight ends on the field, a lot. Mm-hmm. I think Cliff will have 3 tight ends on the field more than he has. Like everybody thinks he's going to line up with 5 wideouts and stuff.
Well,
like,
that's not happening. That's not necessarily who he is, and you can see that in the first preseason game. And I think you mentioned this earlier. Across the board, all the quarterbacks, they perform well, which means that he's getting something to him and Tavita. They're getting the information to those players, and they're taking it and they're working on it. And then when they go out there on the football field, they're doing what the coaches expect of them. But, I mean, I'm watching Cliff, and you see him working little movements, just adjusting one guy from one side to the other. That makes the defense have to show you what they're in or what they're doing. And he made plays against them. You know, so the more I look at him since he's gotten here, air raid is a part of his history, not who he is.
Right. I mean – you were an option quarterback that became a third down back and a punt returner. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I used to do? You know what my first job was out of college? I sold insurance. People evolve. Life changes, man.
Exactly.
Like things happen, dude. And I think there's a little bit of a misnomer with Kingsbury specifically. We got players talking. There's going to be some really interesting discussion from this session because I think they got really good freaking work in today.
They did. And I didn't see any scuffles out there, did you?
Nah, I mean, I think Andre Jones, to me, a scuffle is is when two dudes are actually throwing punches and to the point where one dude gets tackled.
Well, I think Dan said pushing is pushing. If they push, fine. If they don't start, if you don't throw a punch, I don't see other people run up the sideline and do anything. If you two are just pushing each other, you basically look at it and say, they don't want to do anything. So if people got frustrated, and you should. If you're going against somebody, if you are serious about your craft, if somebody gets the best of you, you're going to get frustrated, you know? And you come back, you try to get them the next time. But I have never had a problem with the getting upset and things happening. I just don't like to see people grabbing helmets swinging at.
Sure, it's dumb.
Yeah.
To me, it's football. Like, when you watch a regular season game, and there's a little pushing and shoving after a first down, and somebody points their arm out, the refs don't call that. Mm-hmm. Like, the Supreme Court definition of pornography, I know it when I see it. Like, you know the difference in football between a fight and, like, some pushing, some shoving, some jawing. Yeah, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think far too much gets made of it.
Totally.
Here's what we're going to do. Quick break. We're live in Miami. Going to try to track down some players, see what happens next right here on The Fan. Love this tune, Jeff. It's the vibe right now, man. Me and B are live down in Miami. Commanders joint practice against the Dolphins just wrapped. And I will say, damn near definitively, this was just a really strong session for both teams. I think both teams kind of, you know, got some wins. Both teams took some L's. It did end on a little bit of a tough note for the Burgundy and Gold as McLaurin, I think, slipped coming out of a break. And Kendall Fuller got a pick on Jaden Daniels to wrap things up. But I'm telling you, man, this was a good session. And the Jets was not for Washington, but this one really was. I think you know, the Miami speed is so significant, and I think the secondary actually held up a little bit. We're going to try to talk with some folks that have been watching throughout. We're going to see if perhaps we get a player to join us. I'm going to be honest. We were in a really good position to get a player to join us when they were outside on the practice fields. But once they went inside, I'm not sure we're going to get a player to walk back outside. We were in a strong position.
We were in a stronghold.
but
now it changes.
Yeah. Now I don't know that. I don't know. We'll see.
Yes.
But B, I was just saying, I think this is a really strong day of practice for both ball clubs.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
I just did a little thing with the Commanders PR, but their social media team, and my words, and I meant them, was that, you know, I think when you look out there on the field, they didn't look lost. They look like they belong. And you want to see young guys who you see the coaches constantly mention, you want to see those guys go out there and perform. And Mikey Sanders still a rookie, one-on-one on Tyreek Hill, and the defense was able to get to Tua, the ball floats, and he was able to knock that ball down and be there. And then you got another guy who's completely on a different end of the spectrum in Tyler Owens, undrafted, and the coaches mention his name, and then every day you see him making a play, and you can understand why they're excited about the young man. And he's also making them be more excited about him by making play after play after play.
Even more than that, man, I think you look at now, the Dolphins certainly lost Christian Wilkins. That was a huge loss for them. That's a stud in the middle of that D-line. But I do think having – now, we got to confirm this. I know Coleman was here but didn't do any team drills. I'm almost positive, but I don't want to say it just in case. I'm going to confirm it. But I believe you saw Lucas and Wiley out there. That makes – for like, we had I love him. Dear friend of mine, I know he drives you crazy, but you love him too, Barstool Nate.
Mm-hmm.
And Barstool Nate's very upset that they haven't addressed tackle. But in that Jets practice, man, they didn't have tackles out there. They had Chris Paul and Trent Scott, who, if you get to your fourth tackle on your roster, you're probably in trouble. It doesn't matter if it's the Kansas City Chiefs, the Rams, the Bill, like whatever team. You get to a fourth tackle, you're probably in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Now you are at, I don't know. I think Coleman was certainly tracking to win the job. I think the team also wanted him to win the job.
Yeah.
But you're at least your 1A and your 2 between Wiley. And dude, if that interior is better, like you keep talking about, you know what will help the secondary is the pass rush.
Yeah.
If the interior of the offensive line is significantly better than it was last year, and it was really bad to start last season, that helps the guys on the edges tremendously.
It does.
And, dude, for all, one thing I keep seeing, Cliff is going to have – 2 tight ends on the field, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cliff will have 3 tight ends on the field more than he has. Like, everybody thinks he's going to line up with 5 wideouts and stuff.
Well,
like,
that's not who, that's not necessarily who he is, and you can see that in the first preseason game. And I think you mentioned this earlier. Across the board, all the quarterbacks, they perform well, which means that he's getting something to him and Tavita. They're getting the information to those players, and they're taking it and they're working on it. And then when they go out there on the football field, they're doing what the coaches expect of them. But, I mean, I'm watching Cliff, and you see him working little movements, just adjusting one guy from one side to the other. That makes the defense have to show you what they're in or what they're doing. And he made plays against them, you know. So the more I look at him since he's gotten here, air raid is a part of his history, not who he is.
Right. I mean, you were an option quarterback that became a third down back and a punt returner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I used to do? You know what my first job was out of college? I sold insurance. People evolve. Life changes, man.
Exactly.
Like things happen, dude. And I think there's a little bit of a misnomer with Kingsbury specifically. We got players talking. There's going to be some really interesting discussion from this session because I think they got really good freaking work in today.
They did. And I didn't see any scuffles out there, did you?
Nah, I mean, I think Andre Jones – like, to me, a scuffle is
but –
is when two dudes are actually throwing punches and to the point where one dude gets tackled.
Well, I think Dan said pushing is pushing. If they push, fine. If they don't start, if you don't throw a punch, I don't see other people run up the sideline and do anything. If you two are just pushing each other, you basically look at it and say, they don't want to do anything. So if people got frustrated, and you should. If you're going against somebody, if you are serious about your craft, if somebody gets the best of you, you're going to get frustrated, you know? And you come back, you try to get them the next time. But I have never had a problem with the getting upset and things happening. I just don't like to see people grabbing helmets swinging at.
Sure, it's dumb.
Yeah.
Dude, to me, it's football. Like, when you watch a regular season game, and there's a little pushing and shoving after a first down, and somebody points their arm out, the refs don't call that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Supreme Court definition of pornography, I know it when I see it. Like, you know the difference in football between a fight and, like, some pushing, some shoving, some jawing. Yeah, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think far too much gets made of it.
Totally.
Here's what we're going to do. Quick break. We're live in Miami. Going to try to track down some players, see what happens next right here on The Fan.